Game 6, Houston, Washington. Can Verlander finally get off the schneid in World Series play? This would erase that 0-for-5 mark and send it goodbye forever. LSU picks up another recruit, but this one for way down the road. What are players saying? Why are they all of a sudden interested in LSU? We'll get to the source and talk about it. Plus, Drew Brees and the Saints heading into their bye week right where they want to be at 7-1. Is this the team that gets back to Miami 10 years from their last time they conquered the world? All these stories and much, much more coming your way today, Tuesday, October 29th, 2019.
Looking into the nickel, Rudolph gets the shotgun snap. Winds up, gets the block, arching spiral, far sideline, leaping, attempt to juggle and catch, back pedaling, falling down, inside the pylon, it's a touchdown! Juju Smith-Schuster! He just pulled a Houdini! What a catch!
Rockets by 4, approaching 3 to go in the game. Here's Westbrook at the foul line, shoots over Gilgeous-Alexander, scores! Couple of hoops in a row for Russell Westbrook. 106-100.
Curry front court. They leave him alone, and he buries a 27-footer. Brandon Ingram goes to Jackson Hayes, the rookie. Says, that's Steph Curry. You have to get him.
Good afternoon and welcome on a wet, not so nice Tuesday. It's great to be with you. We're here for the next 2 hours, as we are each and every day from 2 to 4 p.m. on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Let's get to the people that make it happen. My main man CD back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios. He's the stick that stirs the drink. And we're thankful to have him. Yours truly here, Studio 1A, and away we go on another busy, busy day, a day where the NCAA has voted, the top decision makers voted today unanimously to allow college athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness in a manner consistent with the collegiate model. The board wants each three divisions of athletics to implement new rules by January 2021. Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for tonight at 7:07. First pitch, Houston Astros, Washington Nationals. This World Series, the task is simple for the Astros. Win tonight or tomorrow night, and they're the World Series champions. Plain and simple. The home field edge has been oddly non-existent in this World Series, but try to tell that to a Houston team that's returning to Minute Maid Park just a win away from a championship. They've got their bats back. They hope they have their real regular season Justin Verlander back as he goes up against Steven Strasburg. Verlander 0-for-5 in his six, has an 0-5 record in his six starts in World Series matchups. He's been great in the regular season. In the World Series, not so much. But his manager, A.J. Hinch, unwavering in his support of Mr. Verlander.
We believe he's going to be at his best. He loves this big stage. He loves being relied upon. Like his preparation, I mean, he's going to be as intense as he's been probably the entire season because he knows what can happen at the end of 27 outs with the season on the line.
Chance to wash away a lot of bad, bad memories. If the Nationals can upend the Astros at home again, as they did in games 1 and 2 behind Steven Strasburg tonight, they got a chance of giving the ball to Max Scherzer, who was a late scratch from Sunday night's game 5. But you got to give it to the Stros. Down 0-2 on the road, nobody gave him a shot. Don't say nobody because A.J. Hinch will tell you otherwise.
What I've learned over the last few years of winning is that when something doesn't go your way, there's an immediate overreaction to, like, what's going on? What's wrong with your team? And my message is always that, no, we're the same team. We're the same talent. We have the same vibe. We have the same preparation. And there's this massive reaction. Like, the other team's pretty good. We're still the same team. It's a seven-game series. We have a good team. That's the message.
Got a good team. They got their bats back right now. The Nationals' bats are in a deep freeze since the middle of last week. They need to wake up, and they got to do it against Justin Verlander. Again, 7:07 first pitch right here on 103.7 The Game. In about 7 minutes, Eddie Yarno will join us. We'll go over the pitching matchup. We'll go over Game 6 of the World Series. Meanwhile, man, they just can't win a game. They need an all-star break. They need a break of some sort. That's the New Orleans Pelicans. Losers last night, 134-124 to the Golden State Warriors. The Pels are now 0-4. Steph Curry had 26 to go with 11 assists. They were out-rebounded 61-41, and the Warriors had a 30-13 second-chance point advantage. Alvin Gentry stated the obvious.
You know, that's not really something that they're known for. They've struggled in that department, you know, the last 5 years, really, you know. So that was something that was glaring. And the other thing is that we never contained the ball. We just never got the ball under control and never contained the ball. And they really just outplayed us in every phase of the game. They outcoached us. They did. You know, it wasn't a very good effort all around.
It wasn't. They were lethargic. I mean, look, they lost their first three games, but they were in it. They were battling. They were hustling. There was no defensive effort put out in any way, shape, or form. Gentry was talking about that was not one of their strengths. That was rebounding. And as I said, they out-rebounded the Pelicans by 20. The biggest lead, don't be deceived by the 10-point margin. The biggest lead was 29. Gentry just weren't in the game ever.
The thing that was most disturbing is that they had three baskets when we made a three-point shot and two passes and landed in the basket. And that's just not very good transition-wise. But as I said, I think most of our problems came because we just never had the ball under control defensively. We never controlled the dribbler. And when we did, they got the ball up on the board and then went back and got it again. So first three games, I thought we played well and, you know, gave ourselves an opportunity to win. I just thought tonight, you know, and you look at the end of the game and you look at the score, you go, oh, you know, it ended up being an 11-12-1 game. We were never in the game. We never had any chance at all at winning.
Up next, Denver to the, you know, look, no Jrue Holiday, no Derek Favors, no Zion Williamson. I think the Pelicans looked at each other and said, man, we got no shot. And they didn't. Bad effort. Up next, Denver on Thursday. Coach O's out recruiting, but today they'll be back on the practice field. It's going to be a light week for them. A light practice today. They'll go full pads on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, the veteran players get to coach up the rookies and they have the Tiger Bowl. But Coach O shored up one aspect that they need to work on, and that is one aspect of their special teams play.
You know, we don't want to fumble that punt. We need to be smart on our punt returns. So we need to go back and look what we're doing. And we lost some field position there. And we don't want to do that for sure.
So, Coach O, are you happy that you're the number one ranked team in the country?
Man, I just know we ain't no. We won a football game. That's out of our hands. You know, I don't look at that stuff. And, you know, the rankings matter when it comes down for the playoff time. We got to do control what we can control and just let it happen.
There you go. Meanwhile, Billy Napier's been sitting back, and I mean, it seems like an eternity since they've played last, and they will play again this Saturday, homecoming, Texas State. So Billy was asked at his Monday press conference, "What did you do this past weekend?"
Yeah, carved a handful of pumpkins Saturday. That's for sure. We did some trick or treating early this week. We hooked up with Coach Dez and Coach Sale. Took our crew over to New Iberia and did some early trick-or-treating. So it was good. It was good. I think anytime you can double dip on trick-or-treating, everybody benefits. So we'll do some more later this week.
later this week. Thanks, of course, Halloween is Thursday. But you get to play a team in Texas State. You're 5-2 off to your best start in 6 years. You've never lost to Texas State. You're 5-0 with one win vacated, so really 6-0. What's it like playing a team you've never lost to?
Yeah, I don't know that we're in that place quite yet. I think it's a Western Division opponent. It gives us a chance to really create momentum and work towards the ultimate goal here. You know, and I think that we're not the type of team, I don't think, that can just put the ball down and check the box. You know, we're very much a work in progress. We've got lots of young players playing that need to make improvement. We've got specific areas on our team where we need to kind of go to that next level.
All right, so light years since last they played. They're healthy. I got to believe they're chomping it. They're tired of playing it, practicing against each other. Texas State's in for a rude awakening. Kind of a weird weekend. Just the Raging Cajuns. No LSU game, no Saints game. Meanwhile, LSU basketball will be traveling to Shreveport for an exhibition game against Louisiana Tech this Saturday. We'll hear from head coach Will Wade later on in the program. We're brought to you each and every day by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you're not a Buku Rewards member yet, man, you're missing out. You really are. It doesn't cost you anything to join up. It'll take you about 10 seconds, literally. Literally. And once you become a member and you go to one of the 60 ShopRite Tobacco Pluses in southern and central Louisiana, the savings are going to come back to you in Buku mannerisms. Multiple ways. It's great. It's simple. It's easy. Just go to ShopRite. Ask. And you'll see everything that they've got for you and your family, for your tailgating needs, your travel needs, or if you just need to pick up something quick and get home. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. Game 6, I'll be watching it tonight. Eddie Arnold's been in this situation before. The former Tiger All-American, New York Yankee World Series winner. He'll preview Verlander versus Strasburg. It doesn't get better than that. With all the pressure in the world on both teams, you don't want to get it to a Game 7 if you're the Stros. And the Nats, man, they're just praying to stay in Houston an extra day longer. We'll be back with that story next here. Tuesday edition, the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
And we welcome you back. We begin Game 6 of the World Series. And if you're an Astros fan, you'll like this stat. The home team is 43-24 all-time in Games 6 of the World Series. So you're hoping, if you're an Astros fan, that this will be the end all. I think those that don't have a rooting interest in this thing want to see a Game 7. Always Game 7s are the greatest in professional sports. Eddie Arnold has been in pressurized situations in the World Series, in both collegiately and in Major League Baseball. He's been around the block or two, and he is kind enough to join us today. And, man, Eddie, thanks for the time, first of all. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, sure, Jordy. No problem. Anytime, you know, talking baseball, I'm here. Feeling well.
I mean, this hadn't happened very often. Five games, and the road team has won all five of them. And if Washington is able to win tonight, it'll be the first time in World Series history that six games and all won by the road team. And that's certainly in play here, but right. It's been crazy so far.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I think it's been three times, five games where the road team has won them all. And I know the Yankees in 96. To Atlanta. They won two. They lost the first two and then won the next four. But anyway, this would be the first time, man, that the road team would win all six games. So you know, they always say about baseball, you know, you never know when you go to a game, you might see something that happens for the first time in a sport that's been played, you know, 130+ years, 135 years or so in this country. To be able to see a first is pretty unique. And, you know, I was just watching, you know, they're recapping it, of course, all over the place, the series, and a lot of talk about it. There hasn't been a lot of drama, you know, really. I mean, the games haven't come down to, you know, the 4-1 game was pretty close, but, I mean, a lot of them have kind of been decided, you know, a little lopsided. I mean, the last three, obviously, Houston put it on them pretty good. So I'd expect these next two to be, if there is two, I mean, I expect it to go game, you know, to a game seven.
Do you?
I think there's going to be, I think there's going to be a little bit more drama. Something's going to happen. There'll be a few other things, you know, extreme things maybe that go on.
Crazy. So, Eddie Yarnell kind of talking to us. You're a pitcher. Strasburg versus Verlander. Verlander's making his 483rd start of his career. That's regular season and playoffs. But he's 0-5 with a 5.73 ERA in six career World Series starts. For a pitcher so great, boy, he hasn't had any luck once he gets to the biggest of stages.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, that happens. There's been guys, you know, I think Kershaw hasn't had a ton of success in the postseason for whatever reason. You know, I remember the whole big knock on, you know, John Elway with the Broncos before he won a couple late in his career, you know, Dan Marino kind of thing. And look, they're all great players. Obviously, you know, the Kobe Bryants and the Derek Jeters and obviously, you know, Bill Russell, I think he's won the most championships out of anybody in, you know, professional sports, Bill. Obviously, when you're, you know, you have that attached to you, it raises your, I guess, ability level kind of, or puts you on a little bit different league level as opposed to someone who does. And I understand, look, it means more, it's magnified, it's harder, you get less opportunity. So, Justin is well aware of that. Obviously, he knows his performance has been not up to his standards. Forget about anybody else's standards. I mean, as a player, that's what you hold yourself higher than anyone else can, I think. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely going to want to go out there, and, you know, he pitched well the last time. You know, he kind of got squeezed a little bit on the call, maybe, and kind of came out of the game maybe where he didn't want to in that situation. But it's going to be really tough to put up zeros, you know. So I'm not sure he's going to be able to shut out Washington in how many times innings he pitches, but. Man, it's going to be a battle, and I quit. It's like a heavyweight punch, man.
Yeah.
You know, heavyweight fight. You got, you know, Washington came out and landed the first two, and then Houston comes back with three. I don't think Washington's just going to lay down here and not have some fight. And I expect them to win this game.
I think they've got the best player that they could possibly wish to have on the mound in Strasburg. He is 4-0 with a 1.93 ERA in this postseason. He's got a career 1.34 postseason ERA. It's been one of the most dominant playoff pitchers in Major League Baseball history.
I mean, I think minimum, you know, minimum six starts or something. He's like in the top three all time, right? I mean, something crazy. And I think this year what you're seeing with Strauss, this is what it looks like from a distance from watching. I mean, those guys are loose. They're having fun. I mean, the clubhouse is like a party after the game from what I hear. You know, music, dance. So I think they're allowing themselves to have fun, you know, and realize that this is a game and to go out and play for each other. And, you know, the shame we didn't get the game five matchup we were looking for with Scherzer on the mound against Cole. But, hey, it could work in Washington's favor because now you're going to have them in seven if you can win six. So right now, I mean, it was like after two games in Houston, oh, God, the Astros are in trouble. They got to go to Washington. Now it's like, oh, God, the Nationals are in trouble. They got to go to Houston for two. Well, I mean, if the trend keeps up, I mean, I think we're in for a great, you know, end of the baseball season, these next game, possibly two.
Eddie, this would never happen in football. This would never happen in basketball. Why is the home field such a non-advantage in baseball as compared to the other pro sports?
Yeah, you know, it is. It's weird. I mean, there is an edge. I mean, if you look overall, I mean, MLB records, home and away, obviously, most home teams are going to have more wins at home. But in this, I think is, and Coach Bourbon used to tell us this at LSU, kind of a couple things will happen. Now, obviously, when we would play in our regionals and play a lesser opponent, you know, from a smaller conference, he said they're either going to get super, super amped up and adrenalized and come out there and play a little bit up to that energy level, or they're going to be overwhelmed. I mean, obviously, these guys are professionals and they're not collegiate, you know, small teams from a small conference in college. But I think the energy kind of helps both, because you don't have people screaming, yelling negative things, you know, at the Astros when they're in Washington. I mean, for the most part, you know what I mean? It's not like they're chanting negative chants or something when they're hitting. So I think the energy level is just something that the guys feed off of, and it's just that atmosphere, whether it be home or road, that these guys just get a little bit more focused and amped up, and it's been fun. It's been fun to watch.
Who's the key, other than the pitchers, who's the key for the Astros winning, and who's the key for the Nationals in winning, or is there one?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, you know, your pitchers hold that, you know, hold the balance of that. But I mean, in terms of, you know, the guys coming up with big hits, I mean, you got your everyday regular guys that are, you know, been performing. I mean, Alvarez has been hot for Houston. You know, inserting him in the lineup was kind of unexpected, especially in Washington. They didn't think he was going to play much with no DH. So, I mean, I look for Alvarez. I think the lefties, Alvarez and Brantley for Houston, have to come out and put together a couple hits. I mean, you know, Bregman's had a couple hits, not in big spots, but I mean, enough to where he's got, you know, when he hits them, he hits them. You know, you got the grand slam. And on the flip side, man, I look for the veteran guys, man. I'm looking for Zimmerman and Howie Kendrick, I think, for the offensive side. I mean, young guys, Soto and Robles. But I like those two guys, Zimmerman and Kendrick, and then the two lefties, Alvarez and Brantley for Houston. So look for those guys.
So you think it's a drama-filled game, and you think the Nats win it, and we're going to Game 7?
That's what I'm hoping for. But that's awesome. I mean, that's just what I think. That's the way that it feels to me. It's going that direction. And I know a lot of people are Houston fans around here, rightfully so, they're right down the road. And I have a bunch of friends out, and I'm one of, you know, managers, a guy I played with for years. So I just think it's going to play out that way, and it'll be a great Game 7, man. You always want
I
game
love
seven.
It. Eddie, you're the best, buddy. Thank you so much. Enjoy it.
Awesome. I will.
All right, man. You take care. Eddie Yarnell, kind enough to join us. Astros and the Nationals, 7:07 first pitch. We'll bring it to you live here on 103.7 The Game, starting at 7, I guess. I don't know. Just keep it on 103.7 The Game. All you recruitniks out there, we'll get you up to speed on LSU next.
Who's got game, and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Well, it's a bye week, and part of what LSU's coaching staff did yesterday and will do this weekend for sure is to go out recruiting. I don't know who else they're recruiting. They've got 24 commits, but they've got some big decisions to make, so we're going to put it in the hands of our decision maker, longtime recruiting analyst from TigerBait.com, our good friend Mike Scarborough. Michael, it's been a while, my friend. How are you?
No kidding, Jordy. How you been?
I'm good. I just wanted to let you, you know, do your thing, and I don't want to come back in. Now, 24 commits. We've got two quarterbacks, six receivers, one offensive lineman, eight defensive linemen, two linebackers, and five defensive backs. Man, where does LSU go from here?
Six receivers, your six receivers, you're counting the two tight ends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do we keep two tight ends, or does the announcement of Gilbert take away from the kid from Colorado who committed, Cole Taylor, earlier? I mean, are those kind of tough decisions that LSU has to make?
Well, you know, as soon as Gilbert shocked the world last week, I reached out to Cole Taylor within an hour or so, and you know, he just so happened to have planned to be on campus this weekend, booked flights for an unofficial visit for the Auburn weekend. So he goes, he told me at the time he hadn't talked to him about it, But they have talked about it. It's my understanding that him and Gilbert met, and LSU views those two guys as two different types of players in the offense, and they absolutely want both of them. Taylor had a really strong senior season, and they don't want him to fall off at all. So, and if you look at LSU's roster, I mean, they can use both of them at that position.
One offensive lineman. They got a bunch of them a year ago. Do they still need to? I mean,
yeah,
do they still need to get another offensive lineman?
I really think that you're going to get two more offensive linemen. I think Marcus Dumervil, Marlon Martinez's teammate. I think he's a probable at LSU, and I think the guard Xavier Hill from Olive Branch, Mississippi, is looking strong at LSU. Ed Orgeron was out Monday recruiting. His first stop was to Olive Branch, Mississippi, and then from there he went to Atlanta. So, so obviously you're saying, well, that's 26. Mm-hmm. Well, you can only sign 25. We still got Jacoby and Guillory, the defensive lineman at Alexandria. He's going to be a part of the class. You had the five-star running back, Zach Evans from Houston North Shore, on campus this past weekend. That's trending LSU in a big way right now.
Okay.
Regardless of what recruiting service you look at and where they have LSU's recruiting class right now, with those kids that I just named, I have a hard time believing that LSU doesn't finish with the number one class in the country on National Signing Day.
So are there some kids that – obviously there will have to be some kids that will have to be told we can't take you. Are there some academic risks here? Or do you think, for instance, a Rakeem Jarrett out of Washington, D.C. is a player who may say, yeah, it's too far away? I'm just using him as an example.
Yeah, well, you know, but Rakeem Jarrett, we know he's been to Tennessee, he's been to Alabama, so – you know, he's getting on a plane regardless of where he's going. So a plane ride's a plane ride. LSU's confidence on him is strong. They don't think they're losing him. And, of course, him and Kayshon Boutte from New Iberia Westgate were both at Alabama this past weekend and getting people nervous, posing in Alabama uniforms and all that on Twitter. But I don't think reading the quotes from Kayshon when he got back and just knowing him and seeing him at LSU games, that's not going to happen. So I think there's a couple of kids on the commitment list right now that their academic transcripts are not probably where you'd like them to be, but I don't know how far out of whack they are. It's a tricky situation. And one thing that we do know, if you're going to cull somebody, you're not culling a Louisiana kid. You just,
right.
That is a no-go zone.
Right.
You think the grass is greener somewhere else. You don't do that to a Louisiana kid. That's why oftentimes in recruiting, you'll see a Florida or an Oklahoma come in and offer a Louisiana kid, and everybody's saying, how come LSU hadn't offered yet? Well, because LSU has to take their time and really make sure that young man's a take and can be a player for him, because once they offer and if he commits, there's no pulling that offer, because you get a black guy in that community,
right,
that high school for a long time if you do something like that. So
all right, Mike Scarborough.
So it's going to be
Mike.
Interesting to see how it plays out, but I think the over and under on how many commitments you see on the list now that maybe aren't there on signing day is probably two or three.
Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. Is this a class that's finished in the early signing period?
I don't know that. I drove up to Mississippi last week to see McKinley Jackson, the defensive lineman that was at one time a commitment to LSU. I mean, they're still recruiting him. George County, high school, and I'm on the sideline, and there's Matt Luke standing next to me.
Ole Miss coach, okay.
Yeah. And so LSU still would love to have him as well. I just don't know how all these numbers are going to work out.
You mentioned Gilbert shocked the world. What happened there? I'd never heard of the kid. Of course, you did. You do. That's your job. But I'd never heard his name mentioned.
Well, Joey, I can tell you that – I knew he was his announcement was happening. I wasn't even paying attention to it. That's how much I knew he was going to Alabama. I know the LSU coaches had no idea that he was going to say their name. That's why it was such a shock. But what does that say about how these kids out of state are viewing the LSU football program right now?
Right.
You know, that was one of the criticisms I had with Les Miles and why they were perpetually in the 9-3 realm, and which eventually got him fired, was when Louisiana wasn't producing enough players at a particular position, he and his staff didn't have the ability to go head-to-head with Alabama and Saban and Urban Meyer, and then at Ohio State and mm-hmm. Dabo Sweeney and the rest for the absolute cream of the crop, best of the best. And then look what Eric Gilbert has done. Look what Elias Ricks has done. Yeah. I mean, look at the names on this commitment list out of state. And Ed Orgeron and his staff have absolutely just blown a hole. And it just set a message across the country. It's a national brand. We're recruiting nationally, and we're going for the best of the best. And then when you start looking for 21, 22, 23, and the kids that are flying in on their own nickel from California and the East Coast for unofficial visits, it's absolutely staggering. And, if you were one of those guys like me that were, scratching your head when Ed Orgeron got the job permanent, if you're not a believer by now, I don't know what to tell you.
It's almost Mike Scarborough at TigerBait.com. Just when you said that, it kind of struck an idea in my. It kind of reminds me of back in the day when Florida State was at its apex, and that was the place, man. Maybe there's a little fatigue with Alabama and Clemson, and maybe they.
No. When that game's on TV next Saturday, how many?
I'm just saying, from a kid's perspective. From a kid's perspective, though, LSU might be the trending place to be.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. They're right there with Clemson as far as being a hot team and anybody you want to put up at the top of the list.
Okay.
What's amazing is that was happening before this Joe Burrow Heisman season. The
uh-huh.
kids already knew that something was cooking there just based on the quarterbacks that were there at the June camp. From out of state,
okay.
that were the who's who of quarterbacks for the next three recruiting years. So, when you're on TV, on national TV, your games are drawing the biggest crowds, the biggest views. It's insane.
Have you ever in your life, as an LSU recruiting analyst, seen a board break down like this? You've got seven commitments from the state of Louisiana, three from Georgia, three from Texas, two from Florida, two from Maryland, two from Virginia, one from Alabama, California, Colorado, D.C., and Washington. I've never seen anything like that.
I remember 15 years ago us doing a feature story where we basically had gone back and said, you're in deep trouble as an LSU football coach and program if your signing classes don't consist of at least 73% Louisiana kids.
Yeah. Well,
and really going back and evaluating the Archer years, the Hallman years, and then when was LSU most successful? The most successful when they averaged about 73% Louisiana kids. And look, because these kids come to camp and you see them, there might be one kid out there that I'm saying, maybe they should have taken that Louisiana kid over that kid out of state. But it's not. This isn't a case where they're ignoring Louisiana and thinking the grass is greener, and that kid in another state actually isn't better than the kid in South Louisiana. It's just an odd thing. I mean, we look at next year in Louisiana. There's four receivers. I got to go back and look. The last count, I think maybe it was nine offers in Louisiana for 21.
Okay.
Maybe it's 10. It was eight at one point. Half of those are wide receivers.
Amazing.
You're still going to need to go out of state and find offensive linemen next year. You're still, and this staff now has proven that they can do it.
Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, kind enough to join us. 24 commitments. National Signing Day is when? The first one?
What's that?
When is the first signing day coming up?
What is that, December 19th?
December 19th. They should have 90% of their class done by then, at least, I would think.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if there isn't, you know, if it's not damn close and you're maybe waiting on a couple. January is going to be pretty uneventful.
They're out there recruiting a whole bunch of kids, and they've got 24 commitments. If they didn't want the kids that they're after right now, they wouldn't be after them. So how many new names do you think are going to pop up on this final board when it's all said and done?
Well, like this weekend, you know, they were going to host one official visitor, and I just put a little update on our message board that they're actually not going to host in this weekend. It'll be a different weekend. So they're actually going to make an open date as far as recruiting. But, you know, like I mentioned, the two offensive linemen, Jacobian Guillory, of course, right. He's got a spot for himself no matter what. Right.
The running back.
Zach Evans. Yep. You know, when Ojulari committed Sunday morning, you know, for the last couple of months, it looked like it was Donnell Harris from Miami that would be that edge rusher, made Texas A&M sick. Now they're all excited because LSU got Ojulari, and now they might be back being the team that is his favorite. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Matt Luke, when I was there, he said to me, man, y'all don't need him, talking about McKinley Jackson. He goes, I went up to him and I said, man, they can't convince this kid to sign early signing period. No, he can sign a second signing period. We're gonna wait for all you guys to fill up. Y'all don't need him. Y'all got all y'all need. You know, and I think there's some schools out there banking on that, watching LSU juggle the numbers in other schools. And there's going to be some darn good football players because of that fall into other schools' laps.
You can't get them all. You really can't. There's no question. But have they addressed all their needs? Do you keep two quarterbacks or do you just keep one? Somebody has to drop off is all I'm saying. So you got Johnson and you got Finley. Finley's the kid from Louisiana, so he's in. Johnson's not.
What do you do? None of the quarterbacks going to drop off. In fact, both those quarterbacks are midterm grads. So, you know, post-Burrow, LSU's going to have four scholarship quarterbacks battling out in the spring.
Never had that before. Never had that before.
And, you know, and that's where it's gotten kind of, I mean, I've been getting some crazy DMs and the message boards are getting filled with rumors and, but, you know, the Gilbert kid, part of the reason why he's at LSU is because Max Johnson helped recruiting LSU.
Okay.
So, I mean, he was a part of that. So,
Give me a name. Look, they got the Gilbert, Ricks, and Jared are the five stars. They got a bunch of four stars. They got a couple of three stars. Who is a name that you're really high on that maybe hasn't caught maybe isn't a five-star or isn't a high four-star. Not that matters in my book, but give me a name of somebody under the radar in this recruiting class that you really, really like.
Well, I don't think any of them are under the radar, but I think the one kid that doesn't get talked about a whole lot because of Jaquelin Roy and Jacobian Guillory, who's not committed, I think Jalen Lee is underrated. I don't think Jalen Lee at Live Oak gets talked about near enough. Okay. I've seen him three times in person this season, and
big defensive tackle, 6'3", 294.
Yeah, I think he's got probably of all the defensive linemen, he might just be the one that has the most untapped ceiling. And I know what's liked about him is the fact that he can play inside at nose or he can play outside is an end. So there's a defensive tackle and a 3-4. So. I can just see him in a couple of years after being in the strength and conditioning program. And a lot of these guys are already getting lean, which is a great trend. Very few of these kids are coming in needing a year to get lean or lose bad weight. They're doing it on their own. And that's a credit to high school strength and conditioning. Yeah. And LSU saying, look, we rather you come in and us need to add 10 pounds of muscle than us need you to drop 10. So,
right. Gotcha.
I can just imagine him just in a couple of years. Heck, a lot of these kids, you see them in June when they roll in, and then you see him in August, and it's amazing what Moffitt and all those guys have done to him in just 2 months.
Yeah. Coy Moore out of Rumble.
Eating in that new facility or eating the right food and getting the right number of protein grams every day.
I'm curious about Coy Moore. Here's a kid from Rumble who was committed to USC. Drop that. He's going to sign with LSU. Same school as Ja'Marr Chase. Who's better coming out of high school out of those two?
Ja'Marr.
Okay.
But Coy is a good one. I think he's got some potential. I think probably on him they maybe need to get some coach some of the wasted movement in his the way he runs routes and.
Okay.
But he's a baller. He's got real good ball skills. So
that's what I want.
They pinpointed him and offered him early, and they were super glad to have him.
So when all's said and done, Coach O says we got all these top recruits now calling us. Boy, that's a great thing to hear.
You know, it usually when it's like this at LSU, you're thinking, boy, it'd be great if they could take 28 or 30. I'm telling you, if they had 35 spots, they could all be filled with top 100 national guys.
That's amazing. That's
not an exaggeration.
I believe it. He's Mike Scarborough. He is must-read material. If you haven't signed up for TigerBait.com, please sign up. This is a great time to do it, as recruiting period is like December 19th is signing period. We'll find out where the tea leaves all settle, and nobody does it better than Mike. Michael, thank you, my friend. Take care.
All right, Jordy. Thanks a lot. Talk soon.
All right, you got it. Well, interesting. I don't know what they're going to do. Somebody's going to have to go. They can't keep them all. It's impossible. Just can't keep them all. So stay tuned. We'll see. Don't forget that the crew is at Randall's Restaurant, Le Bon Ton Roulet, and you can be on television tomorrow, Wednesday. KDCG-TV will be on the scene, set up with cameras to tape the next episode of Le Bon Ton Roulet. Be one of the dancers. We need as many as possible, and the more the merrier. The show starts at 6 with the Cajun Stompers, and then at 7:30 p.m., Troy Lejeune and the Cajun Review take over. Cajun music, authentic Cajun food. New episodes air on KDCG-TV Tuesdays at 6, Sundays at 2:30. For more, visit KDCG.com. Back to wrap up hour number one next.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, basketball. Will Wade had a little press conference yesterday. More on that, but he started the news conference by thanking the fans who attended Saturday's LSU basketball practice. And here's what he had to say on the turnout Saturday.
Turnout was great. It was great for our guys in terms of getting their rings and being able to practice in front of a group of folks. So, thought that was really good for our team, really good for our players.
11 days are left before the November 8th opener with Bowling Green, and Will Wade says just under 7,300 season tickets have been sold. Brian Broussard said yesterday afternoon the number has risen to nearly 7,400. That's the most since the Shaquille O'Neal era more than 2.5 decades ago. So there's some excitement there, right? And Will Wade said it's going to be a different team. And it's not going to have those rim protectors like they had before. But this is kind of a team that he's used to coaching. And he said we need to play to our strengths.
We've just got to play to our strengths. I mean, the reality is we've got a good team. We've got a very, very good team. We've got very, very talented players. But we don't quite have the margin for error that we had last year. You know, last year we had a little bit larger margin for errors because if you made mistakes, we could just erase some mistakes with some plays where we were the only team in the gym that could make those plays. And so we're just not going to have quite the margin of error. That doesn't mean we're not going to have a great year, a very, very good year, and be, you know, could be just as good as we were last year, maybe better.
That play meant get out of the way of Tremont Waters and let him go. And then they had the rim protectors in Cavell Bigby-Williams and Naz Reid. They don't have that now, but they're still going to be good. They play Saturday an exhibition game against Louisiana Tech up in Shreveport to aid those affected by the tornadoes earlier. So basketball season right around the corner. So is our number two. So stick around. This is the Jordy Helfert Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Helfert Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Helfert.
Welcome. Hour number two of two, and away we go on this Tuesday, the 29th day of October. The NFL trade deadline is coming up, and Aqib Talib of the Rams was traded to the Miami Dolphins for a future pick. So Aqib Talib goes from a winning team to a team who's tanking for Burrow, tanking for Tua. We'll see. The Saints haven't done anything yet. Trade deadline ends in about an hour, I believe. So stay tuned on that one. And the other big story of the day, the NCAA Board of Governors took the first step today toward allowing amateur athletes to cash in on their fame, voting unanimously to permit them to benefit from the use of their name, image, and likeness. In a release, it said, we must embrace change to provide the best possible experience for college athletes. That was released by the board after a vote at Emory University in Atlanta. Now the NCAA and its member schools have to figure out how to allow athletes to profit while still maintaining rules regarding amateurism. The board asked each of the NCAA's three divisions to create the necessary new rules beginning immediately and have them in place no later than January 2021. Stay tuned. This doesn't involve every player, but the star players, they're going to benefit. Without further ado, let's do what we always do at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Mr. Domain, do your thing.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, so CD, how about the NCAA finally coming into the real world after all those politicians from around all the governors from all those states, they had no choice.
It's about damn time, Jordy. Cannot wait. More importantly, Jordy, you talked about how it's going to benefit all these big-name athletes. Jordy, it's going to benefit everybody because now we are one step closer to finally having the NCAA football video game back in our lives. It's something I've been waiting for a long, long time, and now we finally are getting that much closer to it. NCAA, thank you for finally getting it right.
Well, look, there's a lot of issues that have to be resolved here, but I'm going to let smarter people figure that all out. So stay tuned. All you car dealerships will have some spokespeople now. And, you know, I don't know if Ed O is going to keep his gig with Raising Cane's. That may go to somebody like a Joe Burrow down the road. Who knows?
Exactly, Jordy. It'll be something to kind of keep an eye on going forward. But, man, it's just a lot of fun, a lot of intrigue surrounding it, what's going to happen, obviously. There's going to be something that's going to be discussed a lot more in depth of the how, the where, and the why.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
This just came to me. I know there are millions and millions and millions to be made, but maybe, just maybe, like a basketball player who is financially challenged at home, maybe there's a way now where he can make money off of his name and image and likeness, and rather than leave after 1 year, maybe we get to keep him for 2 years. You never know.
You never know. I think that'd be probably the most interesting part of all this. And we also got to kind of bring it up whenever you look at the world of college baseball. I mean, obviously, you've got those 11.7 scholarships that they have to dole out.
This
could wind up causing even more intrigue because, of course, you're going to have this name, image, and likeness stuff to where these guys, like the walk-ons and stuff, will be able to make a little bit of extra money because of endorsements
or
something else.
Those walk-ons ain't making doodly. I'm telling you, this is going to be 1% of the entire market. You own a business, all right? Are you going for the walk-on to promote your brand? Are you going for the recognizable name? So a guy like Joe Burrow, for instance, if he was eligible for this, I mean, he could be involved in six different entities where he could benefit off of his name, whether it be, you name it, he could do it. So it's a very small minority that this is going to influence and affect. I can promise you that. So, we'll see. There's a lot to be worked out, but there's a whole lot of people that aren't going to smell anything out of this.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens a little bit further down the line, Jordy. But we'll flip it on over to what's going on with the NFL. And I saw this pop up earlier today. I want to kind of get your thoughts on this and how great it would be to be in New Orleans on the weekend of January 11th through the 13th, because the Saints currently are the number 2 seed in the NFC, meaning if the season ended today, they would host a divisional playoff game on January 11th or January 12th.
Ooh, and what happens? Where you're going.
And then you have possibly LSU in the college football playoff title game in New Orleans on January 13th. That Superdome would be absolutely lit.
I better go get some more sponsors to get some money to be able to afford the tickets for those two events. Plus that would be, and no other city in the world could handle it like New Orleans could.
That would be great. It'd be amazing. That would be great. Amazing to see all that go down. Obviously, you'd probably wind up saying, hey, Saints, you'll play on Saturday. That way you can kind of have enough time to transition the field and get everything ready for that magical day on Monday, potentially having LSU take on a team like Clemson, or maybe it's LSU-Alabama part deux. That's a different conversation for a different day, Jordy.
Yeah.
But the NFL trade deadline just wrapped up, and now nobody has traded for A.J. Green. A.J. Green remaining with the Cincinnati Bengals. You surprised the Saints didn't make any big moves?
I guarantee you they inquired. But they're not going to be held ransom. They're too smart. They're too good at what they do. So I'm sure Cincinnati was looking for an awful lot in return, and the Saints said, "Nah, we're just fine the way we are. We'll stay with what we're doing." Cincinnati, I don't know why they don't trade everybody. Can you imagine? I think the most interesting game of the year is going to be when Cincinnati and Miami play.
Yes.
How are they going to fake the fact that they both want to lose the game? How are they going to do that? That's intriguing to me, and we're going to have to ask the commissioner about that one. How are you approach this game when we all know neither team wants to win? I mean, what if it's 0-0 and they just keep going? What do they do? What do they do?
They both tie, and they have to have like a coin flip to determine who.
Because the owner. The owner's telling the coach, if you win, you're fired. that's the most interesting game of the year, because you can't cover it up with makeup. There's nothing you can do. Everybody in the world knows. Look, Miami started off great. Then they all of a sudden said, wait a minute, we got a chance to win. We can't do this. Come on, Pittsburgh. Come on. And Pittsburgh obliged. So, those two teams are on a collision course. I know this. Bet the under. But I don't know who's going to end up winning. They may not have a winner in this thing.
They just need a
0-0.
They just need to flex that game to Sunday Night Football, Jordy. The Tank Bowl of all Tank Bowls. I would love to see that.
It'd be the greatest. The greatest.
The greatest worst game of all time, and I'm all the way here for it. I said it last night after the Dolphins game. Every Dolphins game, we get one step closer towards a Tank Bowl of the magnitude of which we have never seen before. This could destroy the NFL as we know it. December 22nd, these two teams absolutely are garbage. And the Bengals already decided, the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton, he's not going to be starting after the bye week. So now you have a chance to wind up having it be, you're almost guaranteed to have Tank Bowl of all Tank Bowl.
Can you imagine in the history of the Miami Dolphins, they have the only team that ever went undefeated in a season, and now they'll have a team that went winless in a season. So you talk about penthouse to outhouse.
Yep.
My goodness gracious. That's a game to watch, no question.
Imagine if we like I was mentioned earlier, imagine if that game would actually be tied at the end of regulation and overtime.
What do you do?
What would happen there? just in terms of how you would be able to organize that. And of course, you've got one more game after that. In the case of the Bengals, they'll have the Cleveland Browns, so potentially the Dolphins might be able to like backdoor into a into that tank into that tank spot.
Oh, you know what's going to happen? Somebody's going to break free and is going to have a touchdown in front of them, and all of a sudden they're going to
stop at the
they're
one.
They're going to fall on the ground like they pulled a hamstring. Oh,
the turf
like
monster.
That, like that Auburn player, yes. Number one, who looked over the sideline and they said, "Fall down because we're tired." And he, boy, did he do a back belly flip on that thing. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Exactly, Jordy.
Classic.
It's amazing to see what's been going on with this. And, you know, wow, I'm just seeing this pop up just a minute ago, Jordy. This is coming from Notre Dame. We're talking about the student-athlete's name, image, and likeness. Statement coming from Notre Dame president John Jenkins has long supported the idea that student-athletes should be able to monetize their popularity as long as abuse is prevented and the character as students, not professional athletes, is preserved. So it's an interesting way to kind of look at things, especially when you think about the Notre Dame Fighting Irish and what kind of integrity they've had over the last several years.
Oh, that's a brand, and the quarterback at Notre Dame is going to profit off of this. I heard an interesting quote from, and I can't remember who said it. It doesn't matter who said it, but they said that the best thing that Notre Dame could do right now is to buy out Brian Kelly from his contract and to hire Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer wanted to go to Notre Dame, but Florida beat him to the punch. Urban Meyer's the most renowned coach that's out there without a job. Brian Kelly's going to bring you mediocrity. He's going to get you only so far. Notre Dame deserves national championships, so they said buy out Brian Kelly and hire Urban Meyer, who I promise you wants to get back in coaching. I kind of like the idea. It makes sense to me. It really does. All right, there's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Let me tell you about consistency. When you've put out a great product for nearly 90 years, you know you're doing something right. You know that there's a care involved. There's an attention to detail. It's excellence each and every day. And that's what Cajun Chef does, not only with their hot sauce, but with all their products. So do yourself a flavor. Get a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce and bring it with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. I love it on my scrambled eggs. It is out of this world. Cajun Chef, right there in St. Martinville. They're the best. We'll take a time out here. When we come back, we'll hear more from Will Wade. And we'll talk about that football game that's looming in the distance. A lot different than the last time 1-2 met in Tuscaloosa. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, we welcome you back. I'm still, I'm glad that this has happened with the likeness and image in the NCAA. Look, the NCAA is coming up with all these things. It's kind of a wish list. Of course, you know, compensation is going to be based on the player's participation in athletics, and that's how the market works. But you might be a little bit surprised at who does get paid. If you think this would only benefit football or men's basketball players, have you ever watched the parents of high school volleyball and soccer players? I mean, they throw out money at private instructions for their kids. I mean, there's a possibility for a lot of things, but only the stars are going to be benefiting this. But it's a step in the right direction, and it's like what Clint said earlier. It's as though the NCAA is saying, "Look, okay, we're going to change our stupid rules, so you can have your freaking college football video games back." That's kind of what they're saying in a roundabout way. Okay, we tried, we give, we know we're losing this thing, so we give in. Anyway, so stay tuned for that. Still a lot of kinks and things to work out. Of course, November the 9th, LSU and Alabama will meet again, and if everything remains the same, LSU 1, Alabama 2, it'll be the first time since 2011 when the same two teams met in Tuscaloosa, ranked 1 and 2. A 9-6 repeat of that touchdown-less 2011 game won't be a repeat next Saturday afternoon. It just won't. If you look at the side-by-side comparison of the two matchups, it shows just how different 8 years can make. It's amazing. Go back to 2011. Alabama had the number 14 rushing offense that it ran 58% of the time. LSU, deep in the Les Miles power running era, with rushing plays accounting for 67% of the snaps. 67% of the time, LSU ran the football time and time and time again. LSU entered the Alabama game in 2011 with the nation's number 99 passing offense led by Jarrett Lee. And when they took Jarrett Lee out, we put in Jefferson. Alabama had A.J. McCarron, but at that time, he became a much better quarterback after that game. Witness the national championship game. But the leading Heisman contender that year, Trent Richardson, was the headliner in that offense that ranked 14th in rushing yards. Now snap back to present day, and it's a whole lot different. You've got a pair of top five passing attacks centered around Heisman contending quarterbacks with diminished ground games. LSU members, 67% of the time they ran the ball. Only 29.3% of LSU's total offense comes from running plays that slipped all the way down to 50.8% of the snaps. So they have complete balance, 50% run, 50% pass, but they get their yardage throwing the football. Alabama's running share is down to 50.1% of the snaps. And so offenses are much better. But where the top two teams in 2011 had offenses ranked 23rd for Alabama, 81st for LSU, the two are now top 10 in terms of yardage and two of the top four in scoring. How different is it from now to 2011? Did you know that LSU averages 168 more yards every game now as compared to 2011? I mean, it's remarkable. Remarkable. And we don't have to go back to 2011. Just go back to last year. With Joe Burrow at quarterback, the Tigers had the number 102 passing offense. 102. Now, they're number two. What a difference Joe Brady makes. They had the number 87 total offense. Now, they're number three. I cannot recall ever a more dramatic, drastic turn for the better ever. That LSU group was shut out 29-0 by Alabama, managing just 196 yards, and they only flirted with the end zone maybe once or twice. So it's just remarkable. Remarkable. Now, defensively, well, things have changed. Alabama was unbelievable in 2011. They gave up just 44.9 yards per game. LSU wasn't that far behind at number three, 76.3 yards a game on the ground. Both teams stopped the run. In terms of total yards, Alabama's defense in 2011 was number one. LSU was number four. Neither among the national leaders now. Alabama's number 19, giving up 307 yards a game. LSU's number 24, giving up 315. Wow. Wow. To show how good Alabama was in 2011, nobody gained more than Penn State's 251 yards on Alabama. This year, Ole Miss more than doubled that with 476, albeit in a 59-31 loss. So both defenses have changed. Both offenses have changed. 9-6 isn't happening again. Both teams are riding the wave of modern offenses. And LSU has its best shot at clipping Alabama's win streak since that night, 8 years ago, in Tuscaloosa, when LSU was one and Bama was two. It's their best chance by far. So we'll have to wait and see for sure. One, and we'll delve into an Alabama sports writer who says they don't need Tua. It makes no sense to play him now. Just get him healthy, get him ready for the Iron Bowl. And it's not going to hurt Alabama to lose to LSU, because a one-loss Alabama team wouldn't have to face Georgia or Florida in the SEC championship game, and a one-loss Alabama team will still get into the college football Final Four. That has a lot of merit to it. A lot of merit to it. So we'll delve into all of that as the days go on. But you just feel confident. LSU finally has a quarterback who we all believe in, who can make plays, who's tough as nails. That one play when he ran, was heading out of bounds, and he got popped. He got pelayed, and he got up. I think he went 5 for 6 after that. They scored a touchdown. The game was different. He's just tough, and he's accurate, and that's what you need to do. And it was great that LSU saw a Kevin Steele defense that had 3 down linemen, 1 linebacker, and 7 defensive backs to try and take away the passing game. And he still threw for 300 yards, plus yards. Yes, it hurt come red zone time, but LSU just didn't make enough of the right plays at the right time and still won the game. Giving up 7 points after a muffed punt and still won the game. Getting more penalties than they have had in a game all year and still won the game. Something about them. You just feel something. Now look, they're going to have to earn it. Because one thing I'll say about Alabama, if you're going to beat them, you're not going to destroy them. They're going to fight. They're going to come back. The game will not be over till there's no time left on the clock from the scoreboard perspective, because they're going to be coming. They're too well coached, and they got too many really, really talented players. It's going to be fun. 2 great quarterbacks. If Tua, he's not going to be 100%. But then who is at this time of the year? But how good are these wide receiver core? I think it was well documented before the season that Alabama had the top trio in the country. If they're one, then LSU is 1A with Jefferson and Chase and Marshall. So all kinds of matches, all kind of fun stuff to talk about, and we will. But we'll take a time out here. That brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best truck in the business, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, New Orleans, and Lake Charles. Jack Brabham and his staff, new trucks, used trucks. We lease the trucks. We have a service department, parts department. It's a dream of every truck driver to own a Peterbilt. It's the best. We'll talk about the best maybe in the NFL, the New Orleans.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
One of those strange weekends. No LSU football bye week. No New Orleans Saints football bye week. But we are still thrilled to get Mike Nabors of Cox Sports Television, who covers the Saints, to join us on this wet Tuesday afternoon here in the state of Louisiana and in Acadiana. And Mike, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I am terrific. So, boy, nice to have our boy number 9 back, the first quarterback to reach 75,000 yards. I did the higher math. That's about a little over 42.5 miles of passing yards. That's a lot of arms on a right wing, but, boy, he sure looked good.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A lot of people wondered, why can't you wait till after the bye week? And, you know, we talked to him after every game on CST, and I asked him that. I said, you know, Drew, people are protective of you in the Houdat Nation. They want you to rest. They want you to be perfect when you get back. And he gave me an interesting response. He said, you know what? I feel like I'm on borrowed time, Jordy, that I have to make the most of every opportunity. And, people may, debate that or not, but he felt that way. And, I think that's why he's great, because he feels like if he's going to play, he's going to have to feel right, but he's going to make the most of every opportunity. And he definitely made the most of his chances against the Cardinals.
he may not admit this, and no player may ever admit this, but there is that that inner anxiety or fear of, if I don't get back, I don't care how much I've done in the past, if I don't get back quickly, they may forget about me, and this guy that's taking my place is doing pretty darn good. I better get – he'll never admit it. But as an athlete who's gotten hurt and had a starting job and had to get it, it just kind of plays in you. It's that, I don't know what the proper word for it is, but it plays in everybody's mind. I think that had to do something with his, obviously he loves to play and wants to play, but he said, man, I got to get back in here.
Yeah. You know, I don't think he ever feels like he's going to lose his job to Teddy Bridgewater, but he has a responsibility. He feels it's his football team. It's been his football team for a long time, and he's always kind of been the guy in his career. He had stretches in San Diego where he was benched several times, but mm-hmm. his whole football life, he's had to, A, kind of prove himself, but B, once he proved himself, he's been that guy. And when you're that guy for a long time, you feel that responsibility to be a leader, and you also feel that, you know what, I've enjoyed playing this well. I enjoy working hard to have these kind of moments. And as long as I feel this way, I don't want it to get away. So, yeah, I see what you're saying, and I agree with it.
Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television, kind enough to join us. When did it – I mean, he's never missed games like that before in his long Hall of Fame career. He admitted to having some butterflies. I wonder when it felt like back to the norm again for him.
Yeah, he said he was more nervous for this game than other games, and I think he just wanted to, you know, and he heard everything out there, too, that maybe he should wait till after the bye. He was cognizant of that. I think, you know, the first series you saw the ball float a little bit with Dan Arnold, but he got more and more comfortable. Sean Payton said they didn't adjust the game plan, but it seemed like they just kept opening it up and opening it up, and mm-hmm. The second half, he was vintage Drew Brees, leading quick drives, finding all kinds of guys. So I think, you know, there was a natural comfort level. It's a uncharted territory for him playing with an injury, especially a quarterback with a thumb injury, and he had the brace and everything. So for him to be that comfortable right now and now get a bye week to relax, I think that bodes well for the Saints moving forward.
All the pressure in the world was on Drew Brees. I mean, they're 5-0 without him. It took that 300-plus yard, three-touchdown performance, I think, for everybody to go, okay, because if he had gone, you know, through for 50% completions, 150 yards, and maybe no touchdowns, people would have gone, ooh, what are we doing here? But he lived up to it, and he stepped up, and I just thought he was terrific with all the pressure in the world solely on him.
Yeah, he told me, I said, when did you know? Because, you know, Cam Jordan said after the game, a lot of guys on the team, they weren't even sure, you know, what was going to play out. He said he knew the Saturday before the game in Chicago that he was going to play, but he also knew at the time he had to convince Sean Payton. And, you know, he said it during the week that, you know, I will play when I tell Coach Payton that I can play and he'll believe me. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. I mean, Coach Payton said that, you know, he had a great practice. He threw the ball well even Monday when he came back. So I think they saw that he was ready, and that, you know, the quarterback and the head coach have such a great relationship. There's a sense of trust there, too, that he's not going to jeopardize anything. But I think the thing I would have worried about if I'm Sean Payton is, you know, he's such a competitor, and he said things, you know, during the time he was out that his expectations are a little aggressive. I think you had to make sure that he had – you know, all the right intentions and not try to rush himself back. But all of that was put to rest last Sunday.
Well, I've never seen a team as resilient as this at that level. Teddy Bridgewater is to Drew Brees what Latavius Murray is to Alvin Kamara. I mean, yeah. Murray has become a star in the absence of a superstar.
And I think he's proven – you know, he's not as good as Alvin Kamara, but he may be more durable, Jordy. Alvin Kamara's not used to toting the rock as much as Latavius Murray has the last couple games. And, you know, Kamara still has to kind of find his way in this league where if he's going to be that back, that he can have that the sustained games without sitting out. I think the big takeaway for me is not only Sean Payton doing a great job coaching with all these injuries, but, you know, the two big question marks for this football team before the year, you know, can this offense survive without Mark Ingram and Max Unger? Yeah, they're surviving. They have Eric McCoy, this rookie, who's, you know, playing as good as many centers around the NFL. And now you have Latavius Murray, who you mentioned, who's definitely showing that he could, play like Mark Ingram and be that complement to Alvin Kamara. You know, early on this season, it was all Alvin Kamara. But when he gets back, I think we'll see more of that 1-2 punch that we saw with he and Mark Ingram.
I guess it took Murray a little while to understand the playbook and get acclimated for the coaches to have confidence in him. But, boy, he has taken control of his opportunity. And it was great to see now that Breeze is back and you've got Bridgewater. It was great to see Taysom Hill become more involved. He's my favorite player to watch play. Does he ever not smile, Mike?
No. Yeah, he's always in a good mood. Even when guys are shoving him out of bounds, he kind of looks at him and smiles and walks away. And I thought it was interesting that Sean Payton said, when you get Drew Brees back, you also get multiple players back in the form of Taysom Hill. Your roster is a 53-man roster, but it seems to expand to almost 55, 56, 57 players because we didn't see the playbook open like that with Teddy Bridgewater because they couldn't afford to, really. They want to make sure that they have all their quarterbacks healthy if something happened. But, yeah, with Breeze back, to me, with this defensive way it's playing, the special teams will let these to kind of break out of this mini slump. But this is a complete football team, and this is a team with an offense that continues to put up points. That Niners showdown just kind of staring us all in the face potentially.
Yeah, there's a lot of games prior to that. But when you look at the schedule, there's a lot of winnable games that they'll be favorites in the majority of them leading up to that game with San Francisco. Mike Nabors, CST, kind enough to join us. PJ Williams is now reinstated after his suspension, and apparently, according to reports, the Saints are going to waive cornerback Ken Crawley. Not really a surprise, is it? The best ability is availability, and he hasn't been available.
Yeah, it's Ken Crawley's had a strange run because he had a really tough first year, and then he was really, before that big draft the Saints had, he was one of the starting corners and had a decent year, and then, it's hard for him to survive when they pick up guys like Marshawn Lattimore and Eli Apple. So Crawley, I would expect him to find a home somewhere else because he's proven that, he's rather inconsistent, but at times he can be a serviceable corner. But P.J. Williams is one of those guys that's interesting because he has more talent than Ken Crawley, but he's been up and down too. But when he is up, he's been a real difference maker. So, for so many years, that secondary was a liability in the Peyton era. When it's at its best, they won a Super Bowl with guys like Tracy Porter and Jabari Greer, and it seems like it's as good now as it's ever been. And that really bodes well for the Saints moving forward.
Normally the Saints, Mike, with a 31-9 lead, Drew Brees never comes out of the game. But was that a tip of the cap to say thank you to Teddy Bridgewater to put him in there on the last series so that the crowd could show him their appreciation? Was that kind of a goodwill gesture, you think?
Yeah, I think in the back of his mind, Sean Payton wanted that to happen. You'll know how the game's going to be. And it was kind of a close game early on, even though the Saints – I never felt like they were in trouble in that game, but I think in the back of his mind, Peyton wanted to do that. And it's funny, the Saints fans, for the most part, thought Drew Brees would play in that game, but you saw a lot of signs for Teddy Bridgewater. And, I think Saints fans were rewarded in a lot of ways, especially the Bridgewater fans, because they brought those signs, maybe wondering if Bridgewater was going to play, but not knowing he would get that encore, so they could all use those signs when they applauded him later in the game. It was really neat to watch. And Bridgewater is such a popular guy on this team, the way he's handled everything and the way he has adapted to that locker room. And, he could have started other places. He could have gone to Miami, maybe Cincinnati, some teams like that. But part of it is, I believe, A, they paid him, but B, I think he feels really comfortable in that locker room, likes working with Sean Payton and Breeze. It's been a real natural fit for him in a lot of ways.
But, it's apples and oranges. You can see what this offense is like with Drew Breeze in the lineup once he gets acclimated, and heaven forbid they get their full allotment of skill position people, Cook and Kamara, Traquan Smith, Kirkland, and all these people. They get those people back to couple with this defense. Now we're talking.
Yeah, and if you look at the way this team has approached things, they're all in. The deadline's coming up, and unless something happens at the final hour, I don't think they're going to pick up a wide receiver. But yeah, you mentioned some guys. To me, all of this, we talk about Bridgewater. We talk about Breeze and Kamara and Sean Payton and ho-hum. Michael Thomas just keeps doing his thing, and he's doing it without a lot of help. I mean, we thought Jared Cook would help him. he's been out. I mean, Michael Thomas, it amazes me the numbers he puts up week in and week out, Jordy, and he's not getting any help. When he gets help, if Traquan Smith can come back and play well, you mentioned Kirkwood and some of these guys, and if Jared Cook can come back after the bye week, I mean, how dangerous is Michael Thomas going to be with some help?
Yeah, kind of fitting that Reggie Bush and Marcus Colston get in the Saints Hall of Fame, and Colston gets targeted 11 times, catches 11 passes. That's the first time since Bush did it way back in the day. He is a special player. How does he do it? Or why don't other teams do like maybe the Patriots try and do and take your best player and take him out of the game and make somebody else beat you? I mean, he's just something. He's remarkable.
I just think he's good. I think he's the best wide receiver in the NFL for that reason, is because if you look at some other wide receivers who are considered the best, they have more help than Michael Thomas. They really do. I mean, you could say that about Drew Brees for so many years. He didn't have an all-pro wide receiver until Michael Thomas, which is crazy because Colston should have been many times. But it just shows you how good Brees has been. But Michael Thomas, he just keeps getting better. He got the big contract, and that hasn't, you know, slowed him down. He still works as hard as ever. He's a guy that's really motivated to be great. And that's always great when you have a young player who has that mindset.
And he's smart, man. He keeps giving Sean Payton those Air Jordan $450 a pair of shoes to walk around on the sidelines. That's smart.
He's not dumb, is he? He knows who to take care of.
I can't believe you haven't asked Colston for a pair of those. But look, you've been around this club for this organization for many, many years. You get to go behind the scenes with them. They seem to be as close-knit a club as I can recall any professional team having that type of relationship with one another. Do you sense that?
Yeah, you know what, and I think there are a couple great examples of your point is, you know, you look at the way, you know, Mark Ingram was so important to Alvin Kamara, and he leaves. And, you know, not that they don't miss Mark Ingram, because they do. He was a very popular guy in that locker room. But he leaves, and Max Unger leaves, and this offense and this locker room just continue to be tight-knit and successful on the football field. And I think the biggest example of the locker room is Eli Apple. I mean, he had some locker room issues up in New York for the Giants, said he wasn't a good locker room guy. They bring him in. I think he's the most underrated Saint, Jordy. I mean, Lattimore gets a lot of the attention, and he should, but Eli Apple's contributions, you never hear about Eli Apple getting burned that much during a game. I mean, he's been unbelievable, and he's been great in the locker room, which shows you when you bring a guy into a good locker room, he can adapt. And it was a natural fit with all the guys he played with at Ohio State, from Lattimore to Von Bell. And so it just shows you about the locker room, but it shows you the Saints making a lot of the right moves the last 3 years as well.
Sean Payton had to love those five games inside, going, okay, y'all keep talking about Sean McVay and all these other coaches, and nobody talks about me, and that's fine. But deep down inside, he's got to be feeling pretty good about what he's been doing here.
Yeah, I feel like the look of Sean Payton even after that game is, I know what I have with this football team, but we can't take our foot off the gas.
Yeah.
You know, we have to enjoy this bye week and rest up a little bit, hope we get strong. But, you know, Sean Payton, this isn't his first rodeo. He's been through it a few times, and he knows what he has, and he knows how close he's been the last couple of years, and he should have been even closer.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you don't get these opportunities. Drew Brees isn't getting any younger, and you have this core that he has. If they're going to have to sign all these guys, they're not going to be able to sign all these guys, Jordy. This is the time to take advantage of all of it, and you really can't enjoy it until you get it all at the end.
Yeah, it's fun times, no question about that. The crowd, everything is just aligned so properly. So what does Mike Nabors do on a bye week? I mean, everybody wants to know, are you jettisoning to Cancun, to St. Bart's? I mean, what are you doing?
Well, I'll tell you two things. I actually I review sports movies. I'm going to go to L.A. and review this Ford versus Ferrari movie, and I'm excited about doing that. But I also want to plug this, and you can check it out on all the Saints platforms. We talked about it last week.
Yes.
We shot a recent episode. We run errands. It's a concept my company came up with here in Tampa, and the Saints have contracted us to do it. We run errands with sports celebrities. We pick them up. They have three errands. We go run them with them, and we get to know them better. We have an episode of Joe Horn that's already out on the Saints platforms. You can go on their website. We're going to release Lance Moore this week. We just shot one with Robert Meacham, and we've already shot ones we haven't released with Roman Harper and John Stinchcomb, and we have some other big names coming up. So it's a good way to get to know the Saints, maybe hear some stories you haven't heard in the past. So we're excited about it.
Two questions. One, what was the most unusual errand you've had to run to date?
Well, Lance Moore, we went to his chiropractor, and, you know, he got all the stuff that he wanted to get done there, and then both of us got a massage at the end of it. That was kind of nice.
Very good. And since you're a sports movie critic, give me your top three sports movies of all time, from three to one.
Hoosiers, definitely number one. I love Hoosiers.
Okay.
I love Bull Durham. And number three, wow. That's off the cuff here. I got to say Field of Dreams off the top of my head. I would say Hoosiers, Bull Durham, Field of Dreams.
All right. What was the movie? For the Love of the Game was one of my favorites. Release the Mechanism.
Too.
That was a good
one.
All right.
One.
So
yeah, Ford, perfect for those.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Ford versus Ferrari. That ought to be good.
Yes.
That's Matt Damon and
Christian Bale, who's
yes.
an unbelievable actor. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You're just a man of many talents.
I'm trying. You got to create options in this business, my friend. You know that.
Yeah, we need to talk. All right. Mike Nabors, enjoy your trip to Hollywood. Maybe you'll get your hands and footprint on the Grauman's Chinese Theater floor. So we'll see. But enjoy the bye week, and thank you so much.
Anytime, Jordy. Take care.
You good. Mike Nabors, Cox Sports Television. Saints 7-1. Six straight wins, their bye week, and then they come back and the Dirty Birds come to town. So it is a golden opportunity. This is the year. Can they get everybody back healthy and stay healthy? A bye at the perfect time for the Saints. We'll be back to wrap things up. But before we do that, we're always in the giving mood here. And, you know, why not? Because there's so many opportunities out there. And we mentioned it before. We'll mention it again. Big, big homecoming weekend for the Raging Cajuns. They're off to their best start in 6 years. And we at 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, wants to send you and a friend a pair of tickets to cheer on the Raging Cajuns to a homecoming win over Texas State this Saturday at Cajun Field. Just text Cajuns, C-A-J-U-N-S, to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to this Saturday's game. Once again, just text Cajuns to 68683. Chance to win a pair of tickets. Texas State UL brought to you by 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Let's go, Cajuns. Let's get to 6-2. Back to wrap it up next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, Astros and the Nationals, Game 6 tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. Special thanks to Eddie Yarnell for sharing his thoughts on the big matchup. Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, all the latest in recruiting. And Mike Nabors of Cox Sports Television on the Saints. On this day in sports history, we go back to October 29th, the year 2003. It was the start of a legendary journey as LeBron James made his NBA debut for the Cleveland Cavaliers against the Sacramento Kings. So much fanfare, and he did not disappoint. LeBron James, his NBA debut 16 years ago today, October 29th, 2003. Happy birthday to you and yours. If today is your special day, you share with the likes of Andy Dalton, who's 32 years old today and got told today that he's going to the bench. He's not going to be the starting quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. Happy birthday, Andy. And a former LSU Tiger doing great things in Minnesota, Danielle Hunter, celebrating a birthday as well. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Keep adding year after year after year to it. Tomorrow we'll recap Game 6 of the World Series. More on LSU Bama. And more on the Raging Cajuns as they get ready for homecoming. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.